Welcome to the Employment, Law, and HR Podcast with your host, Allison Cauley.
Hello and welcome to the Employment, Law, and HR Podcast. I'm your host, Allison Cauley. Thank you very much for tuning in. For those of you who have listened before, I'm really excited that this show's going out on Friday, the 11th of September. And today I will be travelling to the New Media Europe conference in Manchester, within which the UK Podcast Awards are taking place on Saturday evening, that's Saturday the 12th of September. And I'm really proud that the Employment Law and HR Podcast has reached the final for the UK Podcast of the Year. So please, if you're listening to this today on Friday, keep your fingers crossed for me. I will be bringing you an update on exactly how the podcast awards went and New Media Europe in the next episode. So, and for those of you who follow me on Twitter, I will be doing some live tweeting about who the winners and losers are. So watch out for that. For those of you who listened before will also know that approximately two shows ago, I announced that I would be bringing the podcast to you on a weekly basis and that I would also be bringing you some interviews with some influential people, employers, HR professionals, etc., to give you some additional tips and hints in relation to your employment law and HR needs. Unfortunately, my guest for this week wasn't available to record for the podcast this week, so it's one of my normal shows this week, I'm afraid. But I will be bringing you more interviews shortly. And if you want to be interviewed on the podcast, do please get in touch with me. I'd be more than happy to have you on. In this week's episode of the podcast, I'm going to be talking to you about the new Fit for Work scheme. For some of you may already have heard about this. Basically, what's happened is the government, as part of their agenda, want to encourage more people to be returning to work and for less people to be on sick leave, particularly for long periods of time. And they started by abolishing the repayments for statutory sick pay. So it used to be that when an employee was off sick, you'd have to pay them statutory sick pay, but employers in certain situations could recover that from the government. Well, that was removed, and instead, the new Fit for Work scheme has been brought in. Now, the reasoning behind this is that the decision makers thought that by allowing employers to recover statutory sick pay, there really wasn't any incentive for them to encourage employees to return to work quickly. And so to avoid that, they've now brought this new scheme in, which means that after 4 weeks, an employer or an employee's GP can make a referral to the scheme. Interestingly, the reason why I'm bringing you more details about it now is that the scheme went live for employers around the country on Monday, the 7th of September. So just a week old. And in this week, you have, from now on, you can make a referral directly in relation to an employee. So I thought it'd be useful to give you some background and tell you what it's all about. Now, according to the Fit for Work website, in their blog post that was launched on Monday to coincide with the start for the scheme for employers, they've stated that according to new research, 74% of employers and 63% of employees in England and Wales feel that with more external help, employees would be able to return to work earlier following a prolonged period of sick leave. And this is where Fit to Work comes in. It's external help for employers and employees. It goes on to say within the blog that it's estimated that just 31% of employees currently have access to occupational health services. Well, actually, in my experience, it's only those larger employers who can afford to have occupational health services available. And so, in a way, this Fit for Work scheme is plugging that gap and providing an additional service for small businesses. And there's no cost to a small business for this. No direct cost, should I say. Obviously, you're no longer able to recover your statutory sick pay, and that's going towards funding this. Interestingly, the article also says that over half of employers, so 61%, worry about contacting their sick employees in case they feel that they're putting pressure on them. And similarly, 56% of employees said they would not want their employer to contact them when they're off work because of sickness. This is something that I have definitely experienced, in that many employers I speak to say, well, I can't actually contact them because they're on sick. And employees equally say the same, well, they shouldn't be contacting me because I'm off sick. Well, actually, that's a myth. And as long as the employer is acting appropriately and the medical advice doesn't suggest otherwise, there's no reason why you can't stay in touch with your employees. And actually, the guidance from the new Fit for Work service suggests that employers should be contacting their employees at least once a week. So if you contact your employees whilst they're off sick and then they ask you not to, or they tell you that you shouldn't be contacting them because they're off sick, then it would be worth contacting the employee's doctor or making a referral to the Fit for Work scheme to ascertain if, in fact, their condition means that you shouldn't be contacting them. Because, of course, if medical advice says you shouldn't, then definitely don't. But otherwise, you should be free to stay in touch. And actually, it's that staying in touch which is more likely to encourage employees to return to work quicker than if they're left. In my experience, if they're just left to their own devices, they kind of forget about work and it becomes much more of a pressure and much harder for them and much more stressful when they start to think about work if they've had no contact at all. So that's what the blog said on the Fit for Work website when they launched on Monday. So what does it actually say? Well, on their website, there's loads of information for employers. As you'd imagine, it's been set out so that it's much easier for you to use. Whether the reality of actually the use of it is going to be easy or not, I don't know because I haven't actually been through it yet, as it's so new. And I don't have any clients who have either. So how's it going to work? What will actually happen? Well, if you have an employee who is off work for 4 weeks or more due to sickness, then you can make a referral to the Fit for Work scheme. And what you do is you go online to the Fit for Work website, which I'll put a link in the show notes, and you fill out a form. There's a button that says make a referral. You click on that and then you answer some questions first off. And the questions include, is the person you're referring living in England and Wales? Is the person you're referring in paid employment? Are you the GP for or employer of the person you're referring? Has the person given their consent? Is the employee you're referring currently off sick from work for 4 weeks or more? And then finally, has the person you're referring previously been referred to the service within the last 12 months? And then it asks you just to fill in those numbers at the capture form to make sure you're not a robot. So you tick those questions, and if you fill in the correct answers and it's applicable, then you will be brought up with a form which you then enter more information about yourself and more information about your employees. So if your employee doesn't live in England or Wales, then they won't be able to use the service. If they're not in paid employment, then again, they won't be able to use the service. Obviously, you have to be their employer to refer them. You need the employee's consent for a referral. If you don't have their consent, then you can't make the referral. And they have to have been off work for 4 weeks or more, as I said. And then finally, if they've been referred to the service within the last 12 months, then they're not eligible either. Once the referral's been sent off, then the employee will be contacted. Now, obviously, you need to have discussed it with the employee before making the referral. And then once the referral goes through, the employee will be contacted within 2 working days by a health professional for a phone assessment, or it's within 5 working days for a face-to-face assessment. In the majority of cases, employees are going to be assessed by phone, so they won't have that face-to-face meeting. And then there will be a personalised return to work plan, which is agreed between the health professional and the employee. The employee then will give their consent to share it with their GP or their employer, or the employer's occupational health department if they've got one. And then the employer will have an obligation to review the plan and to make any necessary changes or adjustments that are required to aid the employee to return to work. Now, on the website, they've given you a toolkit which contains a number of pieces of information, including a sample report, so a return to work plan. And within it, it gives some details about what's happened, the adjustments that need to be made, and some advice for employers, including an anticipated return to work date. What you have to remember is the purpose of this is to try and get people back into work. So they will make a number of recommendations or some signposting for services that will enable you to help them back to work. And one of the things it says is that whilst most of the things that you'll be required to do or might be required to do won't actually cost you anything, there may be times when you have to fund intervention treatment such as physiotherapy or counselling or some other therapeutic treatment. And if you do that, then you will be eligible to claim tax relief on the amount you spend, up to £500 per employee per year. So that's one benefit. There is also scope for employers for obtaining more information or more general advice on how to deal with an employee who's off sick, and that can be done through the Fit for Work case manager, who'll be detailed in the return to work plan. Now, where I think difficulties will arise with this are where the return to work plan makes recommendations for changes or adjustments that maybe aren't realistic for you as the employer to make. That might cause difficulty and prevent the employee from returning to work. And most notably is where the employee won't actually consent or cooperate with the Fit for Work referral. There are, of course, going to be cases, and hopefully there are more cases like this than there are where it causes a difficulty. But there are going to be cases, obviously, where, you know, the Fit for Work scheme will really help employees, and hopefully it will provide that bridge between a sick employee and you as the employer, and then really will help them back into work in a realistic way. For those staff who are off sick for maybe reasons related to stress at work, or who've gone off sick following a disciplinary issue or a grievance, or maybe a falling out with somebody else at work, in those circumstances, employees are less likely to consent to this Fit for Work referral, in the same way as they're less likely to consent to you obtaining a medical report from their GP. And then you're back to square one, really, in a situation where you're having to guess about the employee's condition. That's where you need to have a robust and thorough absence management procedure in place that deals with this, so that you have the opportunity, should an employee refuse to cooperate, to then make decisions based on the information that you do have available to you. There is one other flaw in the Fit for Work scheme that I can see, and that is the fact that the assessment is going to take place over the telephone, and it's going to be largely, well, if not entirely, based on what the employee tells the health professional about their condition. I haven't seen anywhere where the health professional is going to have access to the employee's medical records or to their GP's reports or certificates. So it's going to be very much, as I say, based on what the employee says. And unfortunately, when an employee is off sick, they can look at things in a very negative way, and can be very resistant to any changes or to the consideration of returning to work. So when that happens, they might have very unrealistic expectations or an unrealistic view about their condition, and they're going to communicate that to the health professional, and I just don't see how that's going to then transfer into a return to work plan. I'm sure that the professionals who are dealing with these cases will have targets for ensuring return to work. I'm sure the government will want to see some return on investment and that it's actually working for their aims, which are to get people back to work sooner. So there might be some situations where health professionals are using some standard wording or standard adjustments based on a condition rather than tailoring it to the individual employee. Again, I'm just speculating here. I don't actually know how it's going to work in practice. I could be completely wrong, but that's just my view on it. It'll be interesting to see what the success rates are. And as I say, once I actually have a client who is in this situation, then I will, of course, report back on how it goes. Generally, I tend to be called in or involved in situations where there is a difficulty already. So there might have already been a falling out, or where employees won't actually consent to cooperate. Now, your hands aren't entirely tied by an employee who refuses to consent or to cooperate with obtaining medical evidence, because if an employee is on long-term sick leave and there isn't any immediate prospect of them returning, and you are unable to obtain information about their condition because they won't consent, then you can make a decision based on the information that you do have, and that might be to dismiss an employee or to take disciplinary action against them in relation to their failure to cooperate. So you're not entirely without action. You don't have to sit back and let them be on sick leave indefinitely just because they won't cooperate, but it will make life difficult. And I would suggest that you obtain some specific advice about your situation if that happens. Of course, alongside this fit to work scheme, you also have to have in mind that an employee who's off sick might also be classed as a disabled person for the purposes of the Equality Act, and that would trigger reasonable adjustments as well. I'm sure that we will see some cases in the future where an employee goes through the fit for work referral scheme and an employer receives a plan of action to get them back to work, but the employer either refuses or takes no action or just doesn't do it very well to implement the recommendations, and therefore the employee is unable to return to work. In that situation, I can foresee that there may be litigation in relation to the employer's failures. So that could be in relation to constructive unfair dismissal, for instance, or where the employee is disabled under the Equality Act. A really interesting change, hopefully something that's positive for small businesses and employers. And I would certainly say, think about this, have it in your armoury when you've got employees who are on long-term sick leave. You should be adjusting your HR policies and procedures and any staff handbooks in relation to sickness absence to include this in there, and make it your practice to say, well, if somebody's off for 4 weeks, at that point we're going to trigger the referral to the Fit for Work scheme. If you have any questions about the Fit for Work scheme, or you're having difficulties with absent staff, or you want some advice about amending your policies so that they are working best for you, then you can get in touch with me. It's Alison at realemploymentlawadvice.co.uk. I'd be very happy to help. Okay, so my HR best practice tip of the week is one that flows from a recent case that's been decided by the Employment Appeal Tribunal, and that's what's prompted me to have it as my best practice tip today. Now, the case is a gentleman by the name of Mr. Ramphal, I think that's how you say it, and the Department for Transport. And I have actually reported this in my newsletter, which also comes out today. So if you're not signed up to the newsletter, you can sign up on my website, which is adviceforemployers.co.uk. Then you'll get the fortnightly newsletter, or you can read about the case on my website in the blog pages, and I will put a link in the show notes so you can read the full case if you want to. But essentially, the case is regarding the behaviour and the appropriateness of interventions by HR staff in disciplinary investigations. And it makes for a very interesting reading, particularly if you are a HR professional, and particularly for those who work in-house for companies. But essentially what the outcome of the case is that the HR professionals working for the Department for Transport in this case unduly influenced, or should I say, the Employment Appeal Tribunal judge decided that they unduly influenced the investigator and decision maker in a disciplinary situation to the extent that it potentially renders the dismissal unfair. So whilst as a HR professional, you can give advice about process and procedure to investigating officers and those carrying out disciplinaries, you shouldn't overstep the mark by providing your opinion or influencing the decision. If you do so, then the decision could be deemed to have been taken away from that person, and actually they could have made the decision based on your influence rather than having reasonable grounds for believing that the employee was guilty of that conduct. And that's one of the tests for unfair dismissal. So my HR best practice tip is ensure that you do not cross over into giving your opinion on whether an employee is guilty or not of the misconduct that they're alleged. And you can read more details about that, as I said, on the website adviceforemployers.co.uk. Thank you so much for listening to this episode 31 of the podcast. I do hope that you are enjoying the content and that you find it useful. And if you do have any suggestions, or you'd like to be interviewed, or you just want to give me some feedback, I would love to hear from you. You can contact me via the website, via Twitter, which is Real Advice Work, or email, which is alison@realemploymentlawadvice.co.uk. Have a great weekend, and I look forward to talking to you again next week. Thanks again for listening. Just want to finalise by saying I wouldn't be a lawyer unless I had a legal disclaimer. So I must just say to you that the information in this podcast is for information only. It's a general review and a general update. It's always necessary to get specific legal advice about your circumstances. So please don't rely on anything that you've heard in this podcast. But please do feel free to contact me if you'd like further information or specific advice.